And in the meantime, we're going to, as usual, ask members to keep their feeds muted and raise their hands on their hand on the participant list if they would like to be recognized. And then just leave it there, and then one of our staff will put it down after we're finished. And they gather the names and give me a list so I can call on folks in the usual way. So with that, I'd like to call this meeting to order of the House Health and Human Services Finance Division. Good afternoon, everybody. Formally, good afternoon. Glad to see everyone. And as we get started here this afternoon, first of all, before we get to any official business, I just would like to acknowledge that we've all recently learned of the loss of Representative Jordan's grandmother. I don't know if you had all heard this, but Representative Jordan, we just want to give you our condolences. And
thank you.
Surprised you're here with us today, or kind of maybe not surprised given I know your dedication to your work here, but just want to let you know that our hearts are with you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So with that, members, the first order of business is to approve the minutes of June 5th, which were mailed out to everybody. Oh, I need to find out if there's a quorum present. Ms. Niedernhofer, is there a quorum?
Yes, a quorum is present.
Okay. And Ms. Niedernhofer, did you want to just read through the roll as we've done before? So if members are here but don't hear their name, let us know. And I think this is just the quickest way to do it. So please, okay. Please go ahead.
Liebling, Mann, Schumacher, Akam, Baker, Bierman, Franson, Grunhagen, Haley, Halverson, Hamilton, Jordan, Keel, Kunesh Pudin, Munson, Olson, and Schultz.
Okay, any members who heard the list and did not hear their name mentioned? Okay, thank you, Ms. Niedernhofer. Appreciate that. So a quorum is present, and the roll has been taken. So is there a motion to approve the minutes of June 5th? Anybody want to make that motion?
So moved.
Okay, thank you, Representative Schultz. So Representative Schultz moves the minutes of June 5th. Why don't you just all unmute? We'll just take a voice vote. Is there any discussion to the minutes?
No, exactly.
Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay. All opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you. Okay, with that, we're going to take up now House File, Special Session House File 105, which is my bill. So I'm going to move that House File 105 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And I'll present the bill in a second, but there is an author's amendment which I would like to move first just to get the bill in the shape in which we'd like to discuss it today. And that is the A2 amendment, which was sent out to all the members. So I would move the A2 amendment, and we can discuss it after we get it on the bill. So any questions to that right now? Seeing none, and if you could all unmute again, let's just take a voice vote on that. So all those in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
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 All opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you. So the House File 105, as amended, is the product of collaborative work among a lot of partners. This is, we hope, going to be a consensus bill among the caucuses. This really arises out of what everybody understands, that when the governor's emergency authority is over, that some of the things that he has, some of the flexibilities that he's given to DHS under his emergency powers would immediately sunset. So there's been an effort to codify kind of a wind down period for these waivers. So That was in a different bill. It's now been moved to this bill. It's been called by different little short names at different times. It was Senate File 4200. It was Article 9. But anyway, that is in this bill. So there, and then there are some other waiver extensions that are also in this bill. This is a product especially of the work of counties with DHS and with some provider input as well to try to reach a consensus. I'm not sure we have 100% consensus among those parties because there is sort of a last-ditch effort to try to keep adding new things to this bill, but as the bill is right now, that's what this is. It gives legislative authority to continue certain waivers that are going on right now, in particular some that we want to see how well they may be things that we might want to continue indefinitely, and we're continuing them a little bit longer than the 60-day wind-down period in this bill so that we can continue to gather information and then next session take a look at some of these and see how well they work and make a decision about whether they should continue as a policy or not. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the commissioner and welcome Commissioner Harpstead. And I probably said too much because I know this is more your bill to present. I did hear how you did it in the Senate, which was really helpful. So if you would ignore what I said and just give the presentation that you came to give, that would be great. Welcome.
No problem. Chair Liebling and committee members, I'm recalling back to March 20th, three lifetimes ago, when Governor Wiles signed executive orders 2011 and 2012, authorizing me to flex rules and regulations that would help counties, tribes, health plans, providers, and Minnesotans get through COVID without losing benefits and without being overly burdened with paperwork while understaffed and working remotely. Fast forward to today when we've made those flexibilities available to the people of Minnesota through those orders and also through miscellaneous standing authorities that we already had. We were just presented this morning with decision number 80 at our policy review meeting. We've received thanks and sighs of relief from lots of Minnesotans on the COVID front lines for the flexibility and freedom to deal with this once in a century pandemic while continuing to serve. We've also been able to discuss each flexibility before, during, and after using them with the four chairs of the House and Senate Health and Human Services Committees. And I'm pleased to say that partially due to that regular communication, they have not once exercised their right to stop any of the flexibilities we've put in place. Along the way, we've often said to each other within DHS or with the chairs or with our community partners, why don't we always do it this way? About one or another temporary approach. And of course, the whole world has learned to work with tele-everything in ways we would not have pushed ourselves to do without COVID. In this special session of the legislature, we hold as absolutely critical to provide for a 60-day ramp-up return to some kind of new normal. Needless to say, it would be impossible to stand all these rules and regulations back up the day after the declaration of the end of the state peacetime emergency. So we, our county and tribal partners and community partners, must have your support for a gradual return. Actually, our partners need this far more than DHS does. If you think about it, if the emergency was not extended past June, for example, in some areas, they would have to do two quarters worth of work in one quarter to catch up on assessments, background checks, recertifications, etc. With a 60-day ramp-up, they'd have to do that in 2 months. Without one, they'd have to do that overnight. Many of us have pondered whether any of our flexibilities should remain in place after the emergency, tele-everything being the most popular. So I'm grateful to the Association of Minnesota Counties and MACSA, who took the lead on convening a series of meetings to list their recommendations. We ran their list by tribal leaders, quickly examined them for appropriateness and feasibility, and have a list to present to you today for your consideration to keep the train on the tracks as we all move out of COVID and back to a new normal. It will also give us time to see what's working well, and we may want to work with you to continue some of these after COVID. This legislation would also allow us to continue those waivers that are required by federal law or that allow Minnesota to receive additional federal funding as we respond to COVID. Thank you for your consideration of working to enact the continuation and gradual end of these temporary powers now and going forward in a way that just makes for sensible government. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Commissioner. So now I think we are going to go to Matt Burdick from DHS. And Mr. Burdick, I think you were going to just briefly walk us through with a little bit more specificity what the waivers are in the bill. And then we have a couple of testifiers who are going to go into maybe actually more than a couple, some testifiers. So I think we'll talk about specific ones of interest to them. But Mr. Burdick, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Matt Burdick with the Department of Human Services. I will just quickly walk through those items that are included in the bill, and I also have some colleagues on the line with me if members have questions that I'm not able to answer. So as the commissioner talked about, one of the most important kind of categories of waiver is this idea of tele-everything, the idea of being able to deliver services via phone or video that would otherwise be required to be delivered in face-to-face. And so these are ones that we're looking at continuing through June 30th of 2021 to provide continuity, particularly knowing that even if the peacetime emergency ends, there may be situations that necessitate people to access care in an alternative fashion because it's not safe to be in close quarters for an extended period of time. So the first of these is CB 15. This allows certain assessments for waivered programs to be done by phone or video. Probably the most expansive is CB 16. This allowed a number of flexibilities in telemedicine under our Medicaid program kind of broadly. So it expands what types of modes telemedicine can be delivered for. Typically, we have very strong restrictions on the mechanism by which telemedicine is delivered. So typically not by phone or by FaceTime or even by Zoom as we are here. And so providing some of that flexibility, recognizing that we can't always get people to places that have that more robust equipment. It also clarifies that someone can have their first visit by telemedicine, which was a restriction that we have under traditional times. And we also have lifted the limit of 3 telemedicine visits in a given week. CB 21, this simply expands those same flexibilities to some of our grant programs that are designed to bring mental health services into the schools and just aligning those various funding streams. CB 24, this allows for phone or video to be used in case management services. So kind of a continuation of that theme. CB 30, this is really specific to providers who operate under the license of a licensed provider. So think about in the mental health context, we've got a lot of unlicensed folks who operate under the supervision of a clinician who do a lot of the direct contact with clients. And so this allows them to also deliver their services remotely when appropriate. CB 43 and 44, these are allowing for remote delivery of adult day services, as well as home and community-based waivered services. And then CV 50 allows for the remote delivery of and kind of an expanded use of our intensive early developmental and behavioral intervention, also known as sometimes our autism benefit. And then lastly, in this category, we're allowing supervision of qualified professionals for PCAs to do that via two-way interactive, either phone or video. And then there's a handful of provisions of this bill that are not tied to the tele-everything, but also are important to continue as COVID is still among us. Two of these, CB 27 and CB 38, relate to our housing support program. And the intention here is to make sure that if someone needs to be away from their housing setting, in order to be isolated due to COVID risk, or if they are in the hospital, they don't lose their permanent housing. And so that's really a key provision that we want to make sure that people have stable housing and don't lose permanent housing as a result of issues related to COVID. And then the final one in this category is providing some flexibility and ability for review that if someone is in a state-operated hospital and isn't able to discharge because of complications due to COVID that maybe make it impossible for them to find a safe place to be discharged to, that counties have an ability to appeal being charged for the cost of care of keeping them in our state facilities, recognizing that it is a situation beyond the control of the county case manager and those working with the client due to COVID. And then the last category, as the chair and the commissioner mentioned, relates to continuing those waivers that are actually tied to the federal peacetime emergency and are necessary for us to continue to bring down enhanced federal funding. And so we want to account for a situation in which the state peacetime emergency may in fact end before the federal emergency period, and making sure that we've got the ability to continue those that are prescribed in federal law, and that the state can bring in those additional federal resources to support our work during this time. With that, I'm happy to stand for questions or defer to my colleagues who can help as well.
All right, well, Mr. Burdick, thank you for that. I don't see any questions yet. So I think since there are no questions, oh, you know, one thing I do think we should just mention before we go on is the amendment that I put on the bill. And so members, what that is about, the fact that the housing changes that Mr. Burdick discussed have a cost to them. So allowing someone to keep their housing and not lose it when they go in the hospital past whatever the limit is now, is it 30 days? I'm not really sure. Is it, does anybody know? 30? Anyway, there's a limit right now under law how long someone could keep their housing when they're absent from it under our housing support program. And because we want to be able to let people who are in the hospital keep their housing, you know, so that they have a place to come home to when they're finished with their treatment, there is a cost to that. And so the amendment that I put on, that we've worked very hard to find a way to pay for this without using general fund dollars. And so what the amendment does is it taps the CARES Act money, which is not a great solution because it only, that CARES Act money under current law only lasts until December 30th of this year. And, but it's kind of the best we can do at the moment. There may be another, I understand the department may have another more workable, something else we could do, but this is the best we can do for now. We figured it's best to extend this, even if it only really could go until the end of this year, because we don't have the funds after that. It's better than not extending it at all. So that's what the amendment did. We're trying to finesse that without spending any general fund dollars. So I do see one question. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this question is either for Mr. Burdick or the Commissioner, please. Just wondering, with all of these telemedicine, tele-everything forms, and I know there's a certain efficiency and cost savings, and I'm just wondering if there is any cost saving or efficiency calculated into longer-term savings for the department with all of these new methods, which make a lot of sense, of course, with time savings. And I don't need an answer right now, but I'm just wondering if that's to be calculated in the future plans. You can give me your thoughts.
Commissioner, do you want to?
It's a good question. We haven't done that yet. And so we still pay those providers for those services, and if they choose to do them remotely, that's a choice during COVID. Over time, that certainly could play out, and we could discover that enough people are doing that, even when it's optional, that that there's some savings to the budget. But we haven't done that analysis yet or incorporated that into any of our current forecasts.
Okay.
Representative Bierman.
Madam Chair, just to follow up then also, and just in listening and hearing about all the support for this bill across associations and the parties and apparently the Senate, I'm just wondering what the opposition is to this bill going forward. And if indeed there are, I don't know if this is appropriate to even ask, but are there members in the body today in this committee who have questions or problems with supporting it at this point? Because it seems like for the state of Minnesota, it's economically positive and it's definitely needed by citizens in so many ways. And I'm just curious about any opposition to it.
So Representative Bierman, maybe I'm the best one to answer that. I have not heard opposition from among the community at all. I think if there's opposition to the bill, it's that people want more in it. Okay. Not everything that anyone wants, not everything that everyone wants is in the bill. These are only items that have been agreed to. Whether members disagree or not, I mean, well, that's up to the member to let us know or to vote no, or, you know, hopefully from the discussion, we'll know that. If there are concerns, I definitely hope that we'll know what those are so they can be discussed. But it's my understanding that there's a great deal of agreement around this bill, and we don't know how much time we're going to have in special session, but we are really, really hoping that we can get this bill through. And that's why we've somewhat narrowed it. We're not putting in anything that anyone that we know of finds really challenging, because we really need to get this bill through. Does that help?
Yeah, it does. Thanks, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Bierman. So I know we've got Representative Munson, and then I think Munson and then Grunhagen. So Representative Munson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was looking through your amendment. Do you know how many people would, if the executive order was ended, if we voted to end the peacetime emergency, how many people would be impacted from the loss of housing support? And is this Section 8 housing, or is this a Minnesota-specific supplement to their housing needs?
So thank you, Representative Munson. I can answer a little piece of this, and then I'm going to ask the department to tell me how they came up with the number. But no, this is not Section 8. That's a federal program. This is the Minnesota Housing Support Program. So we might have had a hearing on this at some time. I mean, there are so many. I don't think I knew about this until well into my legislative career. And I continue to get more understanding of these programs as we go along, even though I've now, you know, been in the legislature 16 years. So no one should be embarrassed at all about not understanding these fully. So thanks for the question. No, this is a Minnesota-only program, actually. This is not, there's no federal, a federal part of this program at all, because generally speaking, the federal government does not pay. Well, you can't use Medicaid to pay for housing. And so that's the problem that we have with a lot of our disability folks, and that, you know, that their needs are such that they could get all the services in the world, but they wouldn't have a place to live. So anyway, Mr. Burdick, can you answer the question about how we kind of came to the number?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, first of all, thank you. For the explanation, you're right. This is a state program that provides income support to people who have a disability or a disabling condition that helps them afford their housing. And we've got rules about how long people can be absent during a given period of time. And this flexes those rules to provide some allowances, given that people might be out of their housing longer than would be typical in a normal situation. We can certainly get more background for you about how we arrived at this estimate. This is based on some kind of historical trends that we have, and we're happy to follow up with the committee about how we came up with this cost estimate about the fiscal impact of that provision and how many people it would impact.
Okay, and it's a follow-up. Yeah, and so my thought was that it was a Minnesota program, but there is not a problem with using federal dollars to pay for a gap in Minnesota program funding. Is that the purpose of what we're trying to do here with the CARES Act money?
Madam Chair?
Mr. Burdick.
Thank you for the question, Representative. Our understanding is this is an allowable use of the federal COVID relief funding. Part of those funds can be used to support people from losing housing stability. So we think it fits nicely in that purpose.
Yeah, and Representative Munson, it's a really good question. And I tell you, we've been wrestling with that question for several days as we tried to figure out how to do this. So absolutely, that's been thought through and checked with MMB. And I had the very same question. So it's not that the underlying program is Minnesota funded. It's that the CARES Act funding can only be used for certain purposes. So yeah, no, it's great, great question to raise. Thank you. And let's see, Representative Grunhagen.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask a similar question to the on the finances, but just the other thing then is where's this bill in the Senate? Is it moving, or do you expect it to come up also?
So Representative Grunhagen, I don't know if it's literally moving, but it is an agreed upon bill. So this actually, the language before us is actually the Senate drafted it and sent it over. And I'm not exactly sure who's going to move it first. And, you know, it may be that we need to ask members to suspend the rules to take it up, but it's going to be agreed. If there's any detail right now that isn't agreed upon, and I don't think there is. I think it's all, you know, but any detail that's not agreed will be worked out before the bill moves.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Other questions? Okay, let's go to our testifiers. I want to make sure that they get a chance, and then we can take more questions if there's more after that. So we have Susan Morris, who's a commissioner from Isanti County. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Liebling and members of the committee. Yes, I am an Isanti County Commissioner and also past president of Association of Minnesota Counties. COVID-19 has taught us many things. One thing we've learned that we can do business differently than we previously have done it. We all want to provide services in an efficient and effective manner with a good customer service, and counties are incubators of innovation. County governments had to adapt to both to protect our communities and to serve Minnesotans. That's why the Association of Minnesota Counties convened the Blue Ribbon Committee to examine all of the county operations during this time. We are identifying the best practices, developing innovations, and leveraging technology to better provide services. Through COVID and always, our goal is to protect the safety of our clients and staff while promoting the efficiency and equity of our programs. Waivers issued by the Department of Human Services have made it possible for counties to continue to deliver human services through this pandemic. We appreciate the work of DHS and all of the waivers. When it comes to human services, AMC worked closely with our human services directors from all across the state of Minnesota to identify a list of priority waivers to be extended as we continue to respond to COVID-19. Angela Youngerberg, Health and Human Services Director from Blue Earth County, will highlight 5 waivers that have not been included in the bill. All five will not change the programs, but instead changes how we do business with safety, efficiency, and access in mind. What we have identified are waivers that will improve the program integrity and protect the health and staff of our clients. What we're asking for is an extension of this list of waivers into next year so counties can continue to do these practices safely. And we look forward to coming back next year, working to review and look at the work and to identify some potential long-term innovations. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Commissioner Morris. And I don't think we really talked much about the fact that that we alluded to it, but that the idea here is to give everyone a chance to work more with these policies, and then they can be fully considered where there's some experience with them and hopefully some evidence as well when we come back next session. Thank you very much. Angela Youngerberg.
Good afternoon, Chair Liebling and members of the committee. My name is Angela Youngerberg. I am the Human Services Director of Business Operations for Blue Earth County. I'm also an executive committee member of MACSA, the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators, and I just thank you for allowing me to testify today to all of you. As Commissioner Morris outlined, we ask on behalf of the counties that related to COVID-19 human services waivers and modifications, we ask for the period of ramping down the COVID-19 related waivers and modifications of at least 60 days. As what was described earlier, it's nearly impossible for counties to flip a switch and go back to the way business once was for us. It would be difficult from a standpoint of operations, but more importantly, it would be extremely difficult for the people that we serve to be able to need to switch that quickly. Counties are also asking for an extension of a limited number of essential waivers and modifications so that we can balance worker and client safety and to assess to access services so that they can be maintained by counties after the peacetime emergency ends. And so as outlined earlier, these would sunset in 2021. And really, I like to think of this as counties asking for more tools in our tool belt to be able to appropriately and safely serve the individuals that we work with on a daily basis. I think this would make a significant difference in our ability while both managing the workforce needs and the public needs. Chair Liebling, you had said earlier so eloquently that we're learning about creativity and efficiency during this time, and this is a great opportunity for us for some of these to expand beyond the 60-day ramp down time so that we can learn, we can study, we can determine what we may need moving forward. And so with that, I'd like to spend my time outlining some of the areas that we that are not in the bill today. We did, of course, as Commissioner Morris outlined, we did go through each of the modifications and waivers that were listed, and we requested approximately 15 of them to be extended, not all 60. And the list was judicious, it was measured, and they were reasoned priorities. We group them into three categories about using technology, the tele-everything, as has been referenced a few times, maintaining access to housing and economic support, as well as systemic savings and efficiencies. And so we thank Chair Liebling for the inclusion of the 10 measures from our list in the draft legislation before you today. And I'm going to use my time to go through the five that were not currently on the list. All five are not changes to programs, but instead they're changes to how we do business with safety, efficiency, and access in mind. Of most importance is to know that counties have been working diligently on these remaining waiver items directly with the Department of Human Services, and now we have agreement on some additional items related to timelines on child protection visits and licensing for mental health centers. And I would ask DHS staff to weigh in on each of these as they have provided language and work to address concerns on modifications to each of these priorities. Final agreed upon language is being worked on and will be available soon, so I'm happy to report that. The five that were not in the list in front of you were suspending application requirements for economic assistance programs, that's referred to as CV03. Basically, we're asking for an extension of a limited waiver about the requirements for how individuals apply for services. So for MFIP, this includes suspending the requirement for a face-to-face interaction. But what this does is it really brings it in line with all of our other economic assistance programs. So we would do the eligibility for this program just as though we do for all of the other programs. And that we understand that program integrity measures are very important and that they're not loosened through this, that all checking required of verifications would remain in place. And this would just be done without requiring a face-to-face. So we would still do all of the other pieces that assure program integrity. Another one that we did come to an agreement on with the Department of Human Services to narrow the scope was modifying certain certification requirements for mental health centers. There were five criteria points that were allowed to be suspended or changed, modified through this period. And there's a few that we would ask to continue into the future. So it would be a limited scope. As counties, this is important to us because we are the local mental health authority. And as we think about the smaller, more rural mental health centers in Minnesota, where staffing can be an issue, especially if illness were to hit, this would be an important modification for the sustainability and access for the residents of those counties. The third is modifying the timelines and face-to-face requirements for certain child protection responses to alleged maltreatment. And this change to child protection balanced safety in the middle of a pandemic. Extending the timeline for certain cases for an initial face-to-face visit would allow counties to prioritize resources around safety. And it's important to know that this would only apply when a child has already been seen by another professional, and if the person alleged responsible for maltreatment has no access to the child. And so we have also worked with the department to narrow the scope of this waiver and reach consensus. Modifying certain licensing requirements for substance use disorder treatment is known as CB45. We have continued to work with the department to narrow the scope of the waiver, and we have reached consensus on a number of the variables in this. This was a very detailed, long list of items, and so we have gone item by item to assure a balance of what makes the most sense for people receiving the service and what would need to continue moving forward. And then finally, allowing foster care caseworker visits by video, known as CB11. Federal reconsideration of policies was issued to help stop the spread of COVID-19 and address the current public health challenges. And so what counties would advocate for is that this action be limited and the waiver and modification align with the federal waiver timeline, but not be extended beyond that. So the video conferencing that's used must continue to assess the child's safety, the needs, and the well-being at each visit. And again, we have worked with the department to narrow the scope of this waiver and reach consensus. So thank you very much for allowing me to testify before you today, and I will stand for questions.
Thank you. So I don't, okay, I do see one question from Representative Munson. Let me, before I go to Representative Munson, let me just kind of explain or expand a little bit. So as I said at the outset, the list that's in the bill are things from which consensus has been reached. Now, I know that people are still working on things, and you all have just heard about a number of things that are still apparently being worked on. It does present a challenge because this has got to be a consensus bill. And I do want to say that there are items that were removed because one or another party was not in agreement with them, and the party was not me in any of those cases, just so to be clear. But for example, the one about applying for, I think the MFIP waiver piece, I think the Senate had a problem with that one. So, you know, there's just the reality of the situation is that this has to be a consensus bill. And it's not going to, I mean, I hope that it can have a lot in it that's going to be very helpful to a lot of Minnesotans and a lot of counties, but it may not meet everybody's needs in every way, just to be really clear about that. So I'm going to go to Representative Munson, and then we also have Matthew Bergeron is waiting patiently, and Sarah Grafstrom also to talk about some of these items. But Representative Munson, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Youngerberg for your presentation. I just have a quick question, mostly around the televisits that are being promoted and expanded under this bill. You know, I understand that the providers, you know, the government here checking in on foster kids, and it may be convenient, but I'm really concerned from a child welfare perspective on how much televisits actually can catch a lot of the signs that things may be not right in the home. And I've heard also from nurses that are worried that they're missing things when they do telemedicine with patients. And so extending telemedicine or expanding it could have detrimental impacts for the children we're trying to take care of and for the patients. Did you have feedback like this from the people that you were speaking with and discussing this legislation?
Ms. Youngerberg, that's for her. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Ms. Youngerberg.
Yeah, Ms. Youngerberg.
For the stakeholders involved in the discussions, or to Chair Liebling, did you hear these concerns as well?
Ms. Youngerberg, why don't you address that? I mean, I have heard those concerns. Yes, and you know, and notwithstanding my other statement, I did kind of share that concern as well. But Ms. Youngerberg, why don't you talk about that? Because I think you're narrowing the scope of this somewhat addresses that.
Sure. You know, I think when we think about tele everything, there's not a one size fits all approach to this. And we have been doing telehealth here within our mental health center for a number of years, actually dating back to 2002, and have quite a bit of experience with it. We understand that the service delivery, the actual service that you're providing, needs to also match with the technology and the delivery method that you're using. And I would say that, you know, as we look at the bill and the list of the items that are agreed upon for the use of teleoptions is a very good list, and that it's an option. It's not a requirement, is what I would say. It would allow for face-to-face visits by technology to occur at times when there may not be another option. Now, specific to the foster care side of things, I think it's important to note that we wouldn't be saying that that is then the standard during this time. You know, we've had a few situations where there's concern about the health and safety of individuals in the home or a health compromised family member within that foster care environment, and how we interact is something that we need to do. So, you know, considering all of the variables. And so this would allow us to think about that as an option. But I would say that this does not then mean all visits happen in that way. So it would be permissive. It would be an allowance, but it does not mean that all visits, again, would transfer that way.
Representative Monson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That answers the question. I worry that if there are, you know, bad actors in the foster care system, that if it's their choice or their preference, that of course they would push for appointment only through, you know, the telephone is their option. So that's my worry in expanding the program. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Representative Munson. Yeah, that was, I think that's why this didn't make it into the list. And I think, you know, there was quite a long list, and there's a lot to this, and it's not all stuff that legislators necessarily know all the ins and outs of. So some of it might have, you know, this has all happened pretty quickly. And so things that seemed challenging didn't get parsed very carefully, maybe. And so I think some of the advocates now are at the end are trying to do that, to try to rescue some of this and get it in a more fine, not sure I'm expressing this very well, but, you know, to do it in a more fine-tuned way so that they can have some of what they need without some of the harms that others would, you know, really think of when this happens. So I don't know what the answer is to that, but I know that there will be even though we're having this hearing today, it is quite possible that some of these things might show up and want to be added at some point. And so I am really glad that we're talking about them today. And thank you to Ms. Youngerberg for bringing them up. And I hope that, you know, if people do have questions about them, please do ask, because even though they're not in the bill, if there are ways we can get agreements on these things, we'd like to be able to add some of these things. So, you know, I do want to hear if people find them challenging in different ways. So thank you for that, Representative Munson. I think we could go now to Mr. Bergeron and then to Ms. Grafstrom. Welcome, Mr. Bergeron.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Matthew Bergeron. I'm an attorney with the Twin Cities law firm of Larkin Hoffman. I'm speaking to you today on behalf of the Minnesota First Provider Alliance, a statewide association of over 200 personal care assistant and direct support agencies. I apologize if you can hear the ice cream truck that decided to pull up outside of my apartment building about 90 seconds ago, but I don't have the heart to shoo away the children who are clamoring for it. First, I would like to thank you for the PCA supervision waiver, CB 53, and the amendment you're discussing today. The Provider Alliance worked with DHS for over 2 months on that waiver, and we believe that allowing qualified professionals to supervise PCAs via telephone and video technology will go a long way towards protecting the health and safety of our seniors and the individuals with disabilities who are receiving PCA services, as well as the dedicated workers providing that care. We know that limiting exposure in times of COVID is really important, and having qualified professionals essentially go door to door doing these supervising visits just really increases the risk of infection for some very vulnerable populations. And so being able to do these supervisory visits remotely is hugely important. The one other thing I really wanted to comment on is the current waivers on background studies. We recognize the sensitive nature of background studies, but the Provider Alliance strongly urges the committee to consider extending the waivers or the grace period in the bill a little bit further. We appreciate the language in Subdivision 3 that would extend the background study requirement 60 days beyond the peacetime emergency, but we have real concerns about the capacity, even in ski days, to get those background studies completed. There's some questions about when all of the fingerprint facilities will be open again, how long it would take for certain PCAs to be able to get there, particularly in greater Minnesota, where there's not a lot of these facilities available. And we know that COVID has been very disruptive in the direct care industry. There have been some agency closures, people have changed agencies in order to continue receiving services. And all of those kind of trigger some of these background study requirements. And so the Provider Alliance has been advocating for at least 120 days, kind of a grace period. We 100% support the system that's been in law, even as it's, you know, been kind of a bumpy implementation. But we're just really concerned that 60 days may not be enough for essentially 3 months worth of new hires, new enrollments, agency changes to be processed, particularly considering that instability in the system is continuing. And so there's going to be more agency changes and things like that over that 60-day window after the emergency. So lastly, the Provider Alliance has long supported the change from 275 hours to 310 hours a month for PCA services, and has found that waiver to be very valuable. We do know there's a cost that the department has applied to that cost, and so that may be prohibitive at this time, but we also wanted to support on the record that change more long term. So thank you for the opportunity to speak today, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions members might have.
Okay, thank you. All right, not seeing any questions here. Sarah Grafstrom, welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Sarah Grafstrom. I'm the Director of State and Federal Policy at ARM. Thank you for the opportunity to provide a few brief comments this afternoon on the importance of extending some of the peacetime emergency waivers that have been put in place by the Department of Human Services. The first waiver I would like to speak to is the ability for home and community-based service providers to deliver some services remotely. This option has been critical in making sure that services have not been interrupted during the COVID pandemic. Additionally, remote supports have empowered people and their teams to be creative in service delivery options and tailor them to a person's preferences, needs, and individual circumstances. Providers have been able to support people in maintaining valuable social connections with friends, coworkers, family, and staff through a variety of remote platforms while maintaining the safety of the individuals they support and their staff. Additionally, many of our members have shared with me stories of providing support to individuals who would oftentimes refuse services going into their homes. Now with the ability to provide that service remotely, individuals are more likely to get on the phone or get on a video chat, and the provider is more likely to keep contact with the individual rather than the alternative of driving to the person's home and not having the door opened and the service refused. Remote supports is another option for individuals to receive the person-centered services they need to maintain their independence, and we are grateful to see it included in the list of waivers to extend. Finally, I would like to briefly speak to the waiver of certain background study requirements and echo some of the comments made just now by Mr. Bergeron. ARM would like to express our support of the 60-day ramp up once the peacetime emergency has expired for the fingerprinting requirement for background studies, but to Mr. Bergeron's point, do have concerns about that limited time window. Prior to the COVID pandemic, the fingerprinting component of the background study process was a challenge at times, with fingerprinting sites and hours of operation in some parts of the state scarce and miles away. These issues have been amplified with the pandemic. As we work to get new staff that were brought on during the pandemic in compliance, a phase-in or ramp-up is critical to ensure that there's not a backlog in fingerprinting and background studies that would further exacerbate our workforce crisis and staffing shortages. And with that, thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you for that. So we've spent a lot of time talking about things that are not in the bill and some things that are in the bill. Let me just mention something that nobody else has mentioned that's not in the bill, and that was we right now have a waiver that allows people to get a 90-day supply of their medications instead of 30. And we wanted to continue that waiver because we believe that is really good for patients for a lot of reasons, but we could not get agreement on it. It actually saves money, but there's concern from some sectors. So again, it's a matter of not being able to get agreement with the Senate on that one. So I think that'll come back at some future time, probably when we are cutting the budget and looking for every way to save money. Other questions for members or comments? I'm not seeing any. We're having a little technical problem here. Ms. Niedernhofer and I have not. Oh, good. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We were just mentioning the waivers on the prescriptions. That waiver did not include opioids, did it?
I don't think so, Representative Bierman. I mean, probably, yeah, Matt Burdick is shaking his head no.
And
no.
Madam Chair, I'm just curious what the opposition was to that in the bill.
Well, I can tell you I watched the Senate's hearing on this bill, and there was opposition testimony from a pharmacy organization, and bottom line is they get fewer dispensing fees. Every time they dispense a drug, the 30-day supply, they get the Medicaid fee for that, and so it reduces the fees. That's one of the reasons that they gave. They have a list of reasons, but that was the one that I thought kind of represented their perhaps central opposition to it. An email, and I could forward that to you with some of that. But I'm sure if this comes back up, believe me, I'm sure you will hear all of their reasons. So maybe they'll tell them to you, I'm sure. Other questions? All right, I'm not seeing any. So with that then, I would renew my motion that House File 105 as amended be re-referred to Ways and Means. And I think we need to take a roll call on this. So Ms. Niedernhofer, if you could take the roll, please. Chair votes aye.
Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Akam.
Akam, aye.
Baker. Baker.
Baker, Bierman. Aye. Baker, aye.
Thank you. Bierman?
Bierman, aye.
Cantrell?
Cantrell, aye.
Franson?
Franson, aye. Franson.
Grunhagen?
Aye. Grunhagen, aye.
Haley?
Haley, aye.
Halverson?
Halverson, aye.
Hamilton?
Hamilton, aye.
Jordan?
Jordan, aye.
Keel?
Keel, aye.
Kunesh-Podein?
Kunesh-Podein, aye.
Mann?
Mann, aye.
Moran? Moran?
Moran, yes.
Munson?
Munson, aye.
Noor?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
And Schultz?
Aye.
20 ayes and zero nays.
All right, with 20 ayes and zero nays, the motion prevails and the bill is passed to Ways and Means. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for the good questions as well. I would like to turn now to Representative Pinto's bill, House File 104. And so the chair will move that House File 104 be recommended to be re-referred to Ways and Means. And Representative Pinto, are you here? I'm not seeing Representative Pinto. Okay. When you watch those news commentators, don't you sometimes wonder how they manage when suddenly their guest is not there? There's technical troubles. Is that Representative Pinto?
No, Madam Chair, Representative Bierman.
Yeah, Representative Bierman.
I'm thinking we've heard this bill three times. We could just vote.
I think you're right. We have heard it a number of times. The changes to it are modest. Actually, I wonder if, I don't know if we have any co-authors on the bill as such, but I think we do have, let's see, do we have anybody here from DHS who could speak to this, to the current form of this bill?
Madam Chair, I believe we have Laurie Poussin who's on the line and could speak to the amendment that was adopted this morning.
I think that would be helpful. So this is, you know, once again, let me just give the kind of little brief background as I understand it, or Representative Bierman, you could probably give it too, but because you're right, we have heard it about three times. And for that reason, it shouldn't be a long presentation here. But if you remember, this has to do with coming into federal compliance with our child care rates. And so there is federal money in a fund that is there that can be used for this purpose, at least for until it is expended. And if we don't come into federal compliance, we will, in fact, be fined, or I don't know if that's what they call it, but we will, there's a penalty for not being in compliance. And so maybe we could have then, so this is Representative Pinto's attempt, and I understand that he's been working with Representative Franson, and she had an amendment that kind of made this something that would be doable in this special session, and I was really glad to hear that they're working together. Actually, Representative Franson, I know you're just on the phone here, but is this something that you could speak to? Because I know you've been working with Representative Pinto. Okay, I don't know if she's able to be connected, but so if the person from DHS could talk to us about this a little bit, that would be helpful.
Madam Chair.
Oh, Representative Franson, hi.
Yeah, I was expecting staff to unmute, so I'm sorry. Oh. I couldn't figure out how to do it off my phone.
Oh, sorry about that. Can you talk to us a little bit about the agreement that you reached with Representative Pinto that's represented in the bill that's here today?
So just using federal funds. We would not be putting in any state dollars. I'm unaware that Representative Pinto has agreed to the amendment that the House GOP members presented.
Oh, okay.
So I'm a little confused. I mean, if he did, that's awesome. But okay. I am, as of now, this bill in front of us, we do not support.
Oh, okay. Oh, that. All right. Thank you for clarifying that. I was under the impression that this was an agreed on bill, but since we don't have Representative Pinto, I guess that's a little bit mysterious then.
Madam Chair?
Yeah, Representative Moran.
Yes, so you pretty much explained the bill as it is around the child care assistance program. It is some federal conformity that we need to conform to. And if we do not conform to it, we will be fined. That is the correct word. But I also know that Representative Pinto should be on picking up really soon. Give him a minute. But I know he's coming to join his meeting. We're both doing two meetings at the same time, public safety and health and human service. But he just logged off of public safety to respond to explain the bill.
Oh, right. Thank you very much for that, Representative Moran. That's right. He's in that public safety meeting. Yes. So, okay, there he is. Hi, Representative Pinto. We're trying to struggle through your bill a little bit.
I am so sorry. I actually, Madam Chair, we had that long hearing and I have only two amendments and it happened to be that we were in the middle of one of those amendments. So I actually asked the chair to lay the amendment on the table or withdraw it. To come over here. And so I'm really sorry. I just could not figure out how else to get out of that. I'm sorry. But I am here now.
Okay. Well, if you could just please orient us to what we've got before us and then,
Certainly, Madam Chair. So the bill before you addresses an issue that we did discuss during the regular session as well. Members may recall the child care assistance rates are set based on a survey that's taken every 3 years. Our rates are set on a survey taken in 2011, almost 10 years ago. And then we take the 25th percentile of that survey. So we go down quite far in the survey. The federal standard is the 75th percentile of current rates. We should be striving for that standard. Many other states hit it. But there is a bare minimum, which is the 25th percentile of the current survey. So we're at the 25th percentile of the old survey. So if you're doing the math and following me, we are way out of compliance, which means that our providers and our families are getting far less support than the federal government requires. I should note that this 25th percentile requirement has been newly imposed in the last couple of years by the Trump administration. This is actually a Trump administration initiative of all things. And we want to make sure to be meeting that. There is $65 million available to spend on this. There is a federal penalty of $3 to $5 million that will be coming in the next couple months. So we have to pay money out of the general fund. We'll write a check from the state of Minnesota to the federal government if we don't pay our providers adequately. So seems like a no-brainer to do that. This proposal, I will note, would increase rates to the 30th percentile of that of the survey, trying to get a tiny bit above the minimum anyway. We'll still be below most other states. And it is quite important that we take this step and to do that. I believe you have a tracking sheet in front of you that should kind of show the details. I should note that the tracking sheet does not contain anticipated federal funds. Has been about $30 million a year. It's been very consistent. We can expect to keep receiving that amount. So the numbers you see in the out years where there is a state cost, you can drop that down by $60 million, or $30 million per year of additional money that we expect to be receiving, though MMP can't count it on the tracking sheet at this point. So for all these reasons, certainly urge your support of this proposal, which is really, really, really important to do. To support our child care providers and families.
So Representative Pinto, Representative Franson answered my question. I thought that this bill represented a compromise with the House GOP members, and she said, no, it doesn't. And where are we on that piece? So this does not include the amendment that she had offered. Okay, I misunderstood that.
Apologies. It does not, and certainly there's you know continued discussion. I know that that our colleagues on this committee in the minority and others as well are very supportive of you know we want to make sure that we're making strides for our families and but no, it's continued conversation on that. But what this does is this says we are going to make the commitment to stick with this. I can point out arguments against using that that point, but just to say that's what we're trying to do is. Set a marker and make sure that we increase the rates as is required.
Okay. So. All right. So, so are there questions from members then on this? Probably not a lot since we, as was mentioned, we have heard this a number of times. Do we need to hear from, okay, let's see, Representative Bierman? Did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I did have just a follow-up. The explanation of the money that is available, which we will lose, plus fine potential, we're setting ourselves back $68 million at a minimum if we do not come into conformity. But this amendment to, let me just ask, is that trying to guarantee that we will use federal funds in the future, and is the problem we can't guarantee federal funds? Is that about right?
Representative Pinto?
You know, I may not be aware, Madam Chair, because of the way this day has gone. I gather there's an amendment to the proposal that's in front of you.
So I'm sorry, I was just understanding that there was at one point a, Madam Chair, sorry, Representative Pinto, that there was a request to guarantee that we could get federal funds in the future, and that that's not really doable from a guarantee. And I'm wondering if that's part of the hangup in this whole thing at this point, or is that not the case?
Representative Pinto?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I understand your question, Representative Bierman. So there is this, so here's the thing. We have federal funding to do this rate increase in the short term, in the next year, two, three, depending on exactly how things go. But we have federal funding to do that. And then again, if we assume that there will continue being federal funding, which the tracking sheet doesn't, and MMB can't, but if we do, that extends it. But then there is this question, Representative Bierman, or there's been some discussion about, and there was an amendment when the bill was up on the House floor to say that if there's not continued federal funding, we would not put state money towards this, that at that point the rates would drop back down. There was a question as to whether, in fact, that would satisfy the federal requirements if that were to happen, if we impose that kind of federal contingency, you could call it. And we did receive information in our committee last week that would be consistent with federal conformity, that it wouldn't. That we could do that at least during the period in which the rates would be up and still be conforming with the federal requirements. Now, if the rates drop back down, then we're out of compliance again. That's a different issue and won't come up for a few years. Hopefully that makes sense to you, Representative Bierman.
Madam Chair, thank you. It does make sense. And just one follow-up question. So you said our rates are based on 2011 and they're supposed to be adjusted every 3 years. May I ask why they were not adjusted in 2014 or 2017?
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, I should, I believe that they were adjusted in 2014 to the 20, at that point, the most recent was the 2011 rates. But then there was not agreement following that in 2015 and on to adjust the rates. There should have been, I suspect there's some people in this air committee, I expect including the chair herself, who pushed to have that happen. But as we know, that not all good things get agreed to. And this is an example of something that I think just didn't, session after session after session. And families have been waiting, and parents, and then employers and communities, et cetera.
Finally, Madam Chair, I just want to thank Representative Pinto for his work on this issue. And I hope you can bring it across the finish line this session.
Yeah, we don't want to hear it again, Representative Pinto. We heard it too many times. Okay, so with that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 104 be recommended to be re-referred to Ways and Means. So we'll, the Ms. Niedernhofer please take the roll? And the chair votes aye.
Schumacher.
Schumacher, no.
Akam.
Aye.
Baker. Baker.
No.
Bierman.
Baker, no.
Thanks. Bierman.
Bierman, aye.
Cantrell.
Cantrell, aye.
Branson.
Branson, no.
Grunhagen.
Grunhagen, no.
Haley.
Haley, no.
Halverson.
Halverson, aye.
Hamilton.
Hamilton, no.
Jordan.
Jordan, aye.
Keel.
Keel, no.
Kunesh-Podein.
Kunesh-Podein, yes.
Mann.
Mann, aye.
Moran. Moran,
yes, aye.
Munson.
Munson, no.
Noor.
Noor, aye.
Olson.
Olson, aye.
Schultz.
Schultz, aye.
All
right, 12 ayes and 8 nays, the motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to Ways and Means. Okay, so
thank you, Chair.
Members. Thank you, Representative Pinto. Hope you can go back, no problem. All right, with that, I think we have concluded our business. So if there is no other business before the committee, I think we can be done. And so we are adjourned. Thank you.